Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Kieran Broadhurst. Welcome, Kieran.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really pleased that you're here. We're sitting in the old customs house in the west end of Fremantle.
Yeah.
Fabulous building. It's sort of, in some ways, crumbling, but has its own charm. And here we are in this beautifully sunlit main area, looking at what looks like someone's greenhouse.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is that?
So this is the central building of the commune that we're constructing, and within the sort of fictional premise of the work, like the commune that we're air quotes recreating, was built around a pre-existing rock water feature, like a natural rock pool. And the members of the commune took that as being a sort of metaphorical lens for the way that they would work together, in the sense that, like, a lot of small countercultural communities around the southwest and in Fremantle were very much like a bunch of critters that got washed up into a rock pool and had to coexist together.
This is fantastic. You've already raised lots of questions people will want to know the answer to.
Sure.
So this is part of an exhibition called The Rock Pool.
That's right, yes.
And you've started to give an indication of what the creative thinking behind The Rock Pool is.
Yeah.
And it's going to be opening in this very building at 8 Fillmore Street, Fremantle.
Yeah.
When?
Saturday the 11th of February at 6 p.m.
And how long will it be operating for?
2 weeks, open Wednesday through to Sunday from, I believe, 10 till 4. Yes.
And it's just phenomenal. I've seen water flowing. It looks like you've got plumbers in here. I imagine electricians have done things.
Yes, yep.
Carpenters,
yep.
I know, are at work.
Yeah.
Pascal is over there applying her fine touches to a beautiful Egyptian sun king, or possibly the like.
Yeah.
But you've got a PhD in what?
So my PhD is in fine art, so it's a practice-led PhD. And that PhD was about taking some methods from science fiction, like writing, and using that as a convention for producing artworks where the work was like a fictional premise, and then I would create a museum diorama of that work. And that feeds into this work in the sense that the commune that we're recreating never really existed. But this is very much like a collaborative work and not necessarily science fictional per se.
Well, I haven't lived in a commune.
Yeah, right.
I've sort of walked around the periphery, if you like, metaphorically or mentally.
Yeah.
And there's something about the idea of a commune that's attractive.
Oh, I agree, yes.
There are aspects which would frighten most of us from entering.
Yes.
But you're sort of offering an invitation to enter.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I think for us it's like very much like a aesthetic material interest in the way that these communes were sort of about collaboratively producing a living space together, and the sort of ad hoc methodologies of people who don't necessarily, for example, like know how to build a house, but just they all get together and they build a house anyway. And that house has a lot of like very interesting aesthetic qualities to it because of that. And we're trying to sort of embody those elements within the exhibition, this sort of like can-do ad hoc aesthetic that was present in a lot of the houses that I grew up around down in Margaret River.
Well, you just started to answer my next question. You're evincing a certain understanding, knowledge, practical appreciation of what a working commune can look like.
Yes.
So you were a child of the commune movement.
My parents didn't necessarily like live in a commune themselves, but like a lot of the, I guess, you know, they're not genetically my aunties and uncles, but like my parents' close friends who were essentially like my extended family growing up, a lot of them were hippies who washed up on the high tide line, so to speak, of the countercultural movement, like down in Margaret River. And when I was like a little kid, I'd spend a lot of time in their houses, and I noticed, like, amongst the artists in the show, like, because we were scheming about having a show together and we were talking about what that might be. And then we thought there's this kind of commonality of an interest in these aesthetic elements of these houses that we grew up around, like in Fremantle, and some of the artists are from Denmark and Bridgetown and Margaret River. And so we thought we want to sort of champion those aesthetics, and also the utopian impulse that produced those aesthetics, like, and create our own commune that isn't about any particular community, but is sort of like about the aesthetic sensibilities that emerge from those collaborative spaces.
So describe at the moment what people, as of Saturday, will see and perhaps what you want them to experience when they come in and feel this installation. I love installations. They're just such wonderful creations from the mind.
Yes.
But what do you want them to see and feel?
So for us, this is like, it's kind of like a playful museum diorama-esque recreation of the commune. And in terms of the elements of the work that we present, we're going to have a dining area here, a sort of defensive layer of prickly pear cacti in garden beds at the front of the space.
Is that because they're easy to grow?
Yes, yeah. They're very hardy, and also they're a little bit prickly, it's something for us to hide around and take cover in case the feds rock up. and then in terms of the actual greenhouse itself, like the rock pool's full of water, and it'll be pumping water around the space to a few different water features, and a toilet, and a sink that won't stop running, and all of that feeds back into the rock pool again, so it's a self-completing loop of water. And we'll have some aquatic plants and ferns and the like in the greenhouse here. What else have we got? We've got an astrologer's area with a kaleidoscope telescope. There's going to be a library. We've got a ping pong table for in case we need to engage with sport, you know, as a proxy war with people who might want to like move us along. We've got a tool cupboard / weapons inventory over there.
Semi-automatic weapons.
No. But there is I have made a fish flail. It can be used as a fishing rod or a flail, depending on what you need, you know.
The rock pool, I think you've intimated, is in the greenhouse structure.
Yes.
What do you call that structure? I'm calling it a greenhouse.
Oh, we have been calling it a greenhouse, yeah. And this part of the work was very much produced in relation to the architecture of Old Customs House, because it's beautiful skylight in the ceiling, and we thought, well, what a great spot to have some natural light coming in through the greenhouse itself. And then the idea would be, like, both in fiction and in reality, that the greenhouse is functional. It's a functional greenhouse, and we're going to have a whole bunch of ferns and stuff in there that'll be kept alive by the greenhouse itself. But also there's the whole area, like the floor and the ceiling and the walls are all coated in a solution of Himalayan rock salt, which is what's made that patina on the walls there for its like purifying qualities.
I must say I was wondering. Yeah. It's beautifully located, all of those little splotches.
Yes. Yeah, that was me. Jack took some photos. Jack Warnsborough, who's also in the show, took some photos of me the other day of like mixing up this pink Himalayan rock salt solution and kind of just flicking it onto everything to get the right patina. But the idea is that, and it also suits the spot because this used to be like near the shoreline, and within the fiction of the work, the commune is like a coastal commune, and the rock pool itself is a coastal rock pool so that waves can wash in and out of it and this kind of thing.
When you mentioned the sink that never stops running, that's not meant to be some comment on the plumbing skills of communes.
No. I mean, I think it's more a comment on our plumbing skills more than anything else. Although we did for our own concerns with the heritage space, hire a plumber to make sure the plumbing all worked correctly. It's more just for the joke, and also it makes a really beautiful resonant sound as it sort of runs onto the metal of the sink, which once it's all running, you can really, in the space, it's like a lot of drippy noise happening, which I think is very conductive for the work.
It's very calming, I have to say, having seen it all running briefly the other day.
Yeah,
particularly the way the water comes down the glass roof. When I say glass, we all know it's not breakable. But what about that throne over there?
Oh, this one over there, or the toilet?
The toilet throne.
Oh, yeah. So we were sort of joking about making a toilet plug into the loop, and then one of the people in the show, Jessie Lee Johns, who you might know from making the Commonwealth of New Bayswater, that's part of the Fremantle Biennale.
I do. I had a wonderful podcast with Jesse Lee a few years ago. Yeah. When he had it all set up down towards South Mole.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's in the exhibition and he's mostly responsible for the toilet over there. The idea is that, like, it's... rather than it, I suppose, being an act that's like shameful and hidden away, it's something that is like elevated above everything else, and it's kind of like a observatory, scout tower slash toilet. Yes.
Graham Greene, I think it was, in one of his book of short stories or perhaps novel, had a sequence where somebody went to the trouble of measuring each day how much time they spent in such a place doing various bodily functions. Yeah. It's amazing. So
yeah.
Jesse Lee's right. I mean, it's an important part of our life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's also that there's something kind of romantic about the idea of a toilet with a view. So that's very much what we're trying to tap into with that part of the work as well. Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned a number of the collaborators.
Mm.
Let's go through them again and tell us how you came together to decide to do it, and then, in a sense, divvied up, as you might in a commune, the labour.
Yeah, so it's myself, Kieran Broadhurst, and then Jess Day, Jesse Lee Johns, Pascal Georgie, Oliver Hull, and have I forgotten anyone there? Oh, and Jack Warnsborough as well, yes. In the sort of beginnings of the idea, it was a conversation that Jack, Jess and myself had, where we were sort of thinking about what we might do together. And we thought the best other people to collaborate with would be Ollie, Pascal and Jesse. And we asked them and they all said yes. And we spent roughly a year or so sort of scheming about how we're going to put the exhibition together. And then Art Source and Old Customs House were kind enough to host us for it. So we're finally getting to do it now. In terms of the I guess you could say the curatorial interest behind it, it was very much that there's this sort of commonality in the aesthetics of our practices that has to do with like the localities that we live in or grew up in, and an interest in architecture and very much in ad hoc aesthetics as well. Yeah.
If somewhere through a PhD dissertation you got to that point where you had to communicate to the examiners the higher cultural messages you were sending.
Mm.
What would you be writing down about this?
Oh, from my own personal interest, I'd definitely be talking about utopias and the fragility of them. I'm personally very interested in the way that, well, my personal belief is that art is one of the sort of creative disciplines that can meaningfully engage with utopia and a history of utopias. And work like this is really good because it produces a kind of immersive space where you can move outside of the world that you otherwise exist in, outside of a gallery. When you come into the gallery, you can sort of like participate in the fiction of the work and think through the utopian qualities of it. So that's very much my own interest in it. And through 20th century art history, there's this like ongoing interest in utopia, like through the various manifestos of different movements. And that runs parallel to different countercultural movements across those periods as well. So I'm really interested in that history and the way that that can be reconfigured in the present. But I also think, like, in a broader sense, there's this interesting localized aesthetic element in the work that is to do with the way that hippie counterculture from the States was sort of translated over to Australia and digested amongst the sort of pre-existing aesthetic elements that were here, like within Fremantle, there's sort of like a Mediterranean element to some of the aesthetics of the buildings and the like. Mm. And then communes move into those buildings and they have to deal with that already existing element. And so, you know, as Frederick Jamison would say, like, you know, utopias are able to be produced from whatever means of production are available to them in the present, but also whatever is preserved from the past. And so for me, this work is sort of as much about those aesthetic sensibilities as it is about the way that the utopias of like the hippie countercultural movement are like recalled in the present, like even through like commodity culture and that kind of stuff. Mm. You know, things like crystal healing shops and those kind of things that are very commercial, but whose roots lie in this like very radical counterculture that existed not even 50 years ago, you know?
So in some ways it's a contribution to the to cultural history.
Yeah, I'd like to think so, yeah.
We're in the West End of Fremantle where there are, you know, many examples of built heritage, which are on heritage lists and you can't go touching them. I imagine from the commune days there aren't many bits and pieces of material culture left, so you really are recreating.
Yeah, and I like to think that, like, I suppose for me, in my own personal lived experience, like, these aesthetics are really influential, and it's something that I was very much immersed in through my, like, early childhood and teens. And I think there's something really special about the commitment that these people had to their ideals. Mm-hmm. Like, and even though often it went sour or it ran off the tracks a little bit or whatever, like, it's a pretty big commitment to leave your other life behind and move in with a bunch of random people because you all have a shared belief system and try and make something different, you know? And I think that's really to be championed. And so for me, this is very much like a sort of idealized aspect where we're trying to sort of recall the best parts of that countercultural movement, yeah.
Now, where do you get all the materials to make an installation like this, and what happens afterwards?
Well, the what happens afterwards question is a very good question and something that I'm really going to have to think about. But in terms of the exhibition itself, a lot of it's secondhand material that we've got from scrapyards and from secondhand shops and the like. And some parts of it are new, like the fiberglass mold that makes the rock pool was bought from a gardening rock, like a water feature centre. And then some of it's timber that we already had. Some of the scaffold was donated by a friend of one of the people who work here. And then a bunch of the other stuff has just been sourced secondhand from like Facebook Marketplace and that kind of stuff. Like the greenhouse we bought off Facebook Marketplace for like $400, for instance, or like the Perspex elements of the greenhouse that you can see there, yeah.
And when it's all over, do you dismantle it and store it away? Do you hope somebody like, you know, the Metropolitan in New York or the Museum of Modern Art will put it in one of their rooms?
You can hope and dream, but that'd be great. But like the reality is that we'll chop it up into bits, and all the bits of timber that's still workable we'll store away for future works. And whether the sort of like less reconfigurable elements like the greenhouse or whatever, like maybe the greenhouse just gets installed in my backyard. There's a number of different artifacts from previous exhibitions in my backyard, so it might just add to that collection. Things that very few elements of the exhibition won't be usable again, but unfortunately there probably will be a little bit of waste at the end of it as well. Like for instance, the render, we'll have to crackle the render off of the rock pool before it can be put in someone's backyard. Yeah.
Well, perhaps the secret is, I see that Beyoncé has won her 457th or some large number of Grammys.
Yeah, yeah.
You fly her in, you get her to sort of touch and breathe on it all, and then you chop it up and auction it off for large sums of money.
I mean, that'd be great, yeah. I mean, like, in an ideal world, I would love to be able to just fully store all of the artworks that myself and everyone else in the exhibition has made. But the reality of it is that it'll probably be get chopped up and then reused in a different artwork in the future.
It does raise a very interesting question, going back to art, advancement and protection more generally. For installations, you need big spaces.
You do, yes.
We've got the South Fremantle Power Station, the subject of continuing discussion and controversy. If a place like that were retained with its big spaces, you could, if the curator decided to buy it, take it and continue to run something like that. There's nowhere else too much around in Perth and Fremantle, is there?
No, it's pretty, like Perth and Fremantle are pretty limited in terms of large-scale exhibition spaces, and that's why we're really thankful to ArtSource for allowing us to show this in the old customs house. But yeah, in a broader sense, like there is limited large-scale exhibition spaces, and also in terms of institutional storage facilities, like very few of the large galleries around the place have the ability to store work like this. And so more often than not, whenever if it ever does get re-exhibited, which is a question in and of itself, it's usually remade for the purpose of the exhibition. Yeah.
So you'll be documenting it with yes. photography, filing it away, and podcasts like this will go with it.
Yeah.
So that it can be looked at as appropriate as time goes by.
Yeah.
Kieran, we'll bring the conversation to an end. And I'll be encouraging people, particularly because I just love installations, to come and see it, to think. Utopia, as I see it anyway, is at the base of just about every formal and passing religion and philosophical movement.
Mm-hmm.
We humans have a desire to find utopian solutions. Most of the time we know you can't, but it makes you think about what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to have that effect. But in terms of what you've got and what you've made, are there parts of it that have sort of surprised you in the creation, or are there technical little bits like the flowing water that take your breath away or make you chuckle?
I mean, that's the great thing about working collaboratively, honestly. Like, you know, whenever I make a work by myself, I sort of brew up an image in my head, and when I go and make it, it's much like what I thought it would look like. But what we've ended up making is very much divorced from what I thought the commune would look like initially. And that's great, because it means that the whole collaborative process is like endlessly novel and interesting. And we've very much tried to embody the methodology of working as a commune together while we've made the work. So there's been a lot of like editing and reconfiguring of each other's work and stuff like that. And I love doing that, because it sort of dilutes the authorship of the work and allows for like many sort of maybe like potentially like slightly conflicting voices to be in conversation with one another. And it's a very different way of working and exhibiting than, for example, a group exhibition. We still have work in conversation with each other, but they're discrete and spaced apart from one another, and there's no layering and that sort of thing like what we have here. Like, there's a lot of parts of this work where I couldn't tell you, like, who made what part, for instance.
Isn't that lovely?
And I really enjoy that, yeah. So it's cool to have an exhibition that you're involved in where you keep finding little surprises and little points of interest. You're like, oh, that's great. I would never have thought of that. And I've been blown away by the genius and innovation of all of the collaborators in the show, honestly. Like, I would have been at a total loss without them. And I think it's been really, really awesome to collaborate with everyone and make this.
In a sense, I suppose, when the public come in here, particularly if they've been listening to this podcast, it's an invitation, isn't it, to come in a sense, collaborate with you.
Oh, yes.
Are you all going to be here, or different people at different times?
Yeah, so depending on the day of the week, like, some of us will be gallery sitting the show, and we'll definitely all be here on the opening night as well.
Yep.
And then over the next couple of weeks, like, Sterling from Art Source will do some gallery sitting, and then the collaborators of the exhibition will gallery sit at different times. We're not exactly sure what days, who is doing what on what days yet, but yeah, sometimes we'll be here. And if not, we're always open to questions as well. Yeah, or whatever.
Or challenges.
Yes, yeah. We've had a few locals come in and have a gander while we've been installing. And for the most part, we've received positive feedback. So I'm glad that it's the people who have a living memory of this period, like, are finding the work to be, respectful and conductive to that time in their lives. Yeah.
Well, look, I'll try and rustle up, not a descender, but someone who comes in and says, God, what's this, mate?
Yeah. That's cool too. It's all right. Like, it's an artwork. Everyone's reaction and interpretation is valid, in my opinion. Yeah.
Oh, I think you've been far too generous. Kieran, thanks for joining me
no
today.
Worries.
And
thank you,
very
Michael.
Good luck to you and all your collaborators on this fabulous, interesting work.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.